Hi, it's Sandy Rios, your old friend from The Morning Show. So many crucial and frightening events are unfolding before our eyes. I'd like to invite you to come over to the podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, so that we can work our way through these difficult times together. AFR.net, any podcast platform, or at sandyrios.com. And one more thing, my book, God's Velvet Hammer, is now available on Audible. So come join us at Sandy Rios 24/7, and remember, God's Velvet Hammer, available at Audible.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Welcome, everybody, to the program, Today's Issues, here on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. Tim Wildman here with Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning. And oh, I'm sorry. The Russians have...
No, that was Count Dracula. That's who that was.
I was trying to go with a Russian accent, and I just wanted you guys to be suspicious about whether I was a Russian asset.
Oh, or a bot. You could be a bot.
Yes.
Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
I'm just a plain human.
Plain old human.
Man, how you doing, Brother Ray Pritchard?
I am definitely a bot. Definitely.
A bot, an AI creation.
We don't even know
who's real today.
That we have no idea.
You just feel like you're talking to somebody today, and they're going to do one of those Mission Impossible masks, you know?
Oh, yes. Actually look like they've transformed from between one person and another.
All right, much to talk about today. Not all of it's good, okay, in the world. Ray, give us a good word from the scripture, though, if you would, brother.
Philippians chapter 2, do everything without complaining or arguing, so that you may be blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a crooked and perverse generation. You know, it's a great thing. It's a great note to remember. We are the light of the world. I know Jesus is the light of the world, but as he shines through us, we are the light of the world. And Paul says the key to it is don't argue so much. Don't complain so much. Because when you complain and when you argue, people start to criticize you, and they find fault with you. So let's make this a day when we say, Lord, help me to be content. Help me to be happy where I am. And when things don't quite work out, help me to trust you anyway, so that in this crooked world, and Tim, this world is very crooked indeed, we might shine as bright lights pointing other people toward Jesus.
That's a good word, and I would just encourage our listeners from the scripture that Ray just read. A lot of times we look around at the society around us, and there is a lot to see in terms of darkness. But 2,000 years ago, the apostles were saying, hey, we're living in a crooked and perverse generation. So sometimes the more things change, the more they stay the same. But God never changes. So we can keep our eyes on him and continue to go forward and be lights in the world.
Lights out for the Lord.
What's that?
Or be lights out for the Lord.
Be lights out for Jesus.
I see what it did.
I see it.
Or you want to be a light for the Lord, but you can also, it's good to be lights out.
Hey, man, lights out.
Is that what they say?
Yeah.
And they complimentary. Fred.
Yeah, I was just along with that. I heard a message the other day about we are witnesses. We are Christ witnesses on this earth. And the point being made, and I think it was in Adrian Rogers' commentary I was reading, in order to be good witnesses, you have to give the truth about your testifying to the truth of what the Lord is. And often our witnesses is not so much in words as it is in how we behave.
Yeah.
So we are that light. And we need to be, you know, conscious of that at all times. Are we being good witnesses for the Lord, especially in the times in which we live? Anyway, as Ray just mentioned, living in a crooked world, here's the latest from the crooked world.
crooked and perverse generation.
That's right. Here's what we're talking about. Hey, listen, no laughing matter. Our hearts and prayers are still going out to the folks in North Carolina. And particularly that area of Asheville, Boone, all of those areas. By now, I think most of our listeners have seen the pictures. And, you know, we're several days after the, 2 feet of rain in some parts of North Carolina fell. You know, they're still trying to reach folks. They know. The death toll is around 190. And I think in the county that where Asheville is the main city, I think it was 61, 62 in that area alone.
Right.
I think it's Butcombe County. It is. So, but they're still searching for people. There's a lot of people missing.
Right.
Their relatives in other parts of the state have not heard from them. So it's still very much a rescue mission that's going on. And various ministries are out there doing the very best. We have the helicopter brigade.
Yes.
That's trying to get to a lot of these people just to bring basics, food and water to them.
Right.
So,
because that's the only way in.
Yeah, the roads are all blocked.
Yes.
It's a terrible shape. North Carolina resident Ashley Meadows was talking about the ongoing devastation there. Cut number one.
The street is completely flooded. Everybody on the street lost everything. There's houses that are still standing, but they are completely damaged by 5 or 6 feet of water in them.
Yeah, and that story is being repeated over and over
now,
and over again.
Now, refresh my memory. This hurricane hit a week ago, or was it a week ago and a day? Was it a week ago Wednesday? The reason I'm asking...
Week ago today.
Okay, so here's the thing that I've been thinking about here as I read these stories, and on X, people are posting videos, and the folks are cut off in some communities, no way in or out. They've used up their food supplies, okay, in some cases having a hard time finding drinkable water. A week. Think about that. Yeah. We all get hungry, you know, if you skip breakfast.
Yeah.
We're gone a week. Some of these folks are going 4 or 5 days maybe without any food. You're getting to very dangerous times for the people who are completely cut off.
Absolutely. You know, yesterday, President Joe Biden was made a stop in North Carolina. Vice President Harris made a stop in Georgia. A lot of people think, you know, photo ops, and right. That's the best. But one of the big stories coming out this morning is remarks being made by Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. Now, FEMA is the federal agency that goes in and helps people in times like this. He is saying that, hey, we're running out of money. And people are scratching their heads because this is a department that gets billions and billions of dollars. And what we are learning is that, well, one of the reasons that FEMA apparently is running short of money, they have dedicated in the last year hundreds of millions of dollars to help illegal immigrants resettle in communities across the country.
And that includes probably shipping them.
Yes.
Places, transportation, and then housing.
Housing,
all this.
Food, you know, the whole thing. I went to FEMA's website this morning. I want a verification of this because being talked about. This is from FEMA's website. Folks, you can go there yourself. FEMA.gov.
Federal Emergency Management Agency?
Yes, FEMA.gov. That's the way you can go there. For fiscal year 2024, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security will provide $640.9 million of available funds to enable non-federal entities to offset allowable costs incurred for services associated with non-citizen migrant arrivals in their communities. If I was to paraphrase this, we are going to send hundreds of millions of dollars from our budget that is meant for American citizens in crises like we're seeing in North Carolina right now. Instead, we're going to give that money to help the people that we have allowed to cross our border. And remember, it's up to about 20 million now since the Biden administration came into office. 20 million resettle in communities. taxpayers, we're going to give hundreds of millions of your dollars that are supposed to be for FEMA. We're going to give it to organizations that are now housing, now feeding, now educating, now giving health services to people who have entered this country illegally. So I want you to hear what Mayorkas had to say, but we're also going to hear from the Attorney General of Florida, Ashley Moody, responding to this. Cut number two.
We are meeting the immediate needs with the money that we have. We are expecting another hurricane hitting. We do not have the funds. FEMA does not have the funds to make it through the season.
Everyone should be waking up this morning outraged by that comment. This is not something that has just happened recently, and Florida's been warning about this since this administration took over. Mayorkas has come in like a virus and infected these what need to be healthy, strong, fundamental programs to ensure the stability and safety of Americans in times of disaster. So you heard, they have taken the FEMA Emergency Food and Shelter Program and over time siphoned off hundreds of millions of dollars into basically making it an illegal immigrant resettlement program.
Well, listen, Tim and I were talking, and Ray, we'll let you jump in here too. We were talking this morning how outrageous this administration has been. I mean, a whole swath of issues, but this is one of them. We're going to be talking, folks, later on in this program too, about the vice presidential debate and the comments made by J.D. Vance and when he was fact-checked about how easy it is for people to come into this country. But, Ray, I got to tell you, the amount of money that's being spent, and not just by the federal government, we're talking about states and some of the larger cities. We've all read the stories about homeless veterans getting kicked out of hotels when the city was paying for them to stay there. They kicked out homeless veterans and then put illegal immigrants into these hotels because the hotels apparently were getting bigger money, more money from the federal government to house them rather than the homeless vets. This, to Ashley Moody's point, the Attorney General of Florida, Americans should be outraged.
Look, there's a reason why immigration is at or near the top of things that voters are concerned about this year going into November the 5th, because things have turned upside down. The Biden-Harris administration, they have prioritized, let's be honest, friends, they're not just allowing illegal immigration into the country. They've opened the southern border. So they have come in by the hundreds of thousands and by the millions, and therefore our veterans are suffering, American citizens are suffering, while we're taking illegal aliens, and make no mistake, friends, that's what they are, illegal aliens. We're putting them up in hotels, and we're not taking care of American citizens. One can only hope that the voters of America, Ed, pay attention to what's happening, and there's a day of reckoning coming for this administration on November the 5th.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, Fred, and Ray, next story.
We are about day three into this dock workers strike. I had a visit to one of those big box stores yesterday.
Yeah.
Because I heard about panic buying.
Yeah.
People are panic buying. And this big box store, Sam's, yeah. All right, I'll just talk about it. There's only a couple big box stores. Yesterday, not a paper product could be found. We're talking about bathroom tissue. We're talking about paper towels, et cetera, et cetera. But the panic buying has started because people are afraid of what may happen. Now, there's some stories out there about products. Car parts are going to be affected by this.
Right.
Fruits, some vegetables coming in from other parts, and another string of a whole bunch of stuff that come in, imported into this country. And so people are starting to get worried. Just to review what these dock workers are asking for, they are demanding a 77% wage increase. The people who run the ports offered them a 50% increase over 6 years. 77% was over 6 years as well. Plus, the other thing they're saying, we don't want any automation whatsoever. Now, these are people, some of them, they'll starting wage $80,000 or so, but some of them are making $300,000 a year.
Already.
All right. This is an election year, as everybody knows, so people are wondering, because Vice President Kamala Harris out on the campaign trail says, I'm a friend of the middle class in this country. You know, I want to give them a really good deal.
I worked at McDonald's.
I lived in neighborhoods where people mowed their lawn.
Yeah.
I'm one of you to the middle class. Yesterday, she came out in full support of these dock workers, saying they deserve what they are demanding. And the president has said he is not going to enact the...
Was it Hart Taffley?
Taft-Hartley. Taft-Hartley, yes. Which gives him the power to end these strikes for mandatory services like this. And we're talking a mandatory service. So she's all in on this. She is for these dock workers.
But that's not surprising, right? She's a Democrat, and Democrats are pro-union.
Yes. But here's the there's a conflict for her. She's out campaigning saying these poor middle-class people aren't getting a fair deal. If these folks get their 77% increase, guess what happens? The companies that run these ports have to pass that along, that increase expense, to you and me, and what that means for products out there. And so Steve Scalise, who is the House Majority Leader, was on Fox and Friends this morning talking about this, and he says, you know, the House will not support the demands of the longshoremen. Cut number four.
Right now, under the law, Taft-Hartley allows the president to intervene and break it. The president said, we're just going to let it go on and wreck the economy. I mean, we're losing over $5 billion a day, and costs are going to start going up even higher on families who are already struggling under the Biden-Harris inflation economy. Food on the shelves is going to become more scarce. You know, if you look at Congress, I mean, in the House, we're surely not going to support some kind of deal that says no automation. Imagine that. They want to go back to the Flintstones. I mean, I would bet you they've got more technology and automation in their homes, in their refrigerator, in their smart TV than they want to have on a dock.
Yeah. I'm sympathetic to, and not just these dock workers, but all across the economy, AI and automation and the combinations of the two, that is coming for a lot of occupations, a lot of job sectors, and that is scary. For these workers, I wouldn't mind seeing some sort of compromise where they kind of stretch out the use of automation to allow these people who work today to eventually get to retirement, and maybe you hire fewer people coming up behind them, because automation is going to make our economy more efficient. But you can't just say no automation, like Steve Scalise is saying. That's unreasonable. And maybe
Steve Scalise, a Republican House, one of the leaders, are you saying he's saying no automation?
No, he's saying you can't demand on the part of these
he's saying it's unreasonable for the union to demand no automation.
No automation.
I got you. I follow you.
Yeah.
I thought that's what you meant, but I wanted to clarify for the sake of our listeners.
It does get a little convoluted.
Well, and automation, just to give an example of this, is I'm told in recent days, China, at Chinese ports, they use AI to load these containers onto ships. In other words, it's automated.
Computerized.
Robotics, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it is being done much cheaper in other places,
China. Yeah. You're not going to be able to stop that. So, we may have, as Ray says, we may have holograms doing this show for us in 5 years. We don't know what's
starting next month.
Well, starting next month, yeah.
Then we're going on strike today.
Okay. we demand. Listen, I'm no expert on this by any means. If my son were a longshoreman, I'm sure I'd probably be pulling for his side.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I just hope to get it worked out and worked out in the next few days. Otherwise, this negotiations between between the longshoremen. And I named who they were. Who are they negotiating with, Ray? Do you remember what the name of that group was?
It was the National Maritime Administration. There was
oversees these ports.
Right.
Yeah, who are these? It isn't like they're negotiating with Coca-Cola.
Right.
Or something.
Walmart like that. Right. No.
Yes. Usually when you hear about employees negotiating contracts, it's with the company that they work for, that they're on strike for, that they go out and strike in front of AT&T or whatever, Verizon or whatever, but holding signs. But that's not the case here. I'm not exactly, but the net effect is, and I think the longshoreman union boss, if he can hold his group together, they're going to get what they want more or less. And now that is going to cost the American people more money.
Mm-hmm.
You're right, Fred, because those costs will have to be passed down to, but if you're a longshoreman, you're probably going, yeah, it's passed down. I have to have my salary to do. I'm just saying there's two sides to this story. But that the fellow that is the union boss, I didn't like his attitude. Do we have that?
The U.S. Brent's looking for that, the U.S. Maritime Alliance.
Okay, Ed, you want to break them down for us?
Yeah. So, folks, the U.S. Maritime Alliance is an alliance.
Do a Kamala Harris breakdown.
It is. Groups allied together,
right, in the water,
in the maritime sector.
Yes.
This alliance,
right.
I think we should be allied together.
Right.
And by together, I mean together, like an alliance.
Go, Kamala, go.
And this is the U.S. Maritime Alliance.
Right.
This is not the French Maritime Alliance. The Chinese.
It's a maritime alliance of joy.
And
opportunity.
It is our maritime alliance.
Right, and I come from a middle-class maritime family.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? I think that needs to be stressed.
I am seeing a YouTube video coming.
Listen, so I don't know. But back to your original point,
yeah,
Fred, how this is going to affect us if this continues, us being everybody listening. Ray, you're going to go down to the store and not going to be able to find any toilet paper.
Hey, well, so let me give a little testimony here. This morning, as in about 2 hours ago, we get a lot of our groceries delivered by Walmart, right? So coming to the front door. And I was there, guy was bringing up the stuff. And we got a bunch of toilet paper and paper towels and canned goods. And I never talk to the delivery people. You know, they just come, drop their stuff off, take a picture, and leave.
They're beneath us, really, aren't they?
Well, that sounded bad. What I meant was, I'm never there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not at the door and they're delivering, but I happened to be there, and I got into a discussion with this guy. And I said, are you busy? He said, you wouldn't believe it. I said, then he said, as if he was a prognosticator, said, there are hard times coming. It's a young man. I said, what do you mean hard times coming? Are you getting a run on things? He said, they're cleaning us out. Oh, talking about families, you know, calling into Walmart to make the orders. He said, they are cleaning us out of everything because people are worried about what the next few weeks are going to bring.
And what happens is the inventory at the distribution centers eventually dries up because they will ship whatever they have and people buy it.
And they can't replace it.
They can't replace it. So,
yeah.
Which to me is a further indication of why America needs to bring a lot of its manufacturing back, because this stuff should be made in the United States. And then as long as the truckers don't go on strike, okay, that we have our own stuff. We don't have to rely on.
That ship has sailed, Ed.
That ship has sailed.
That ship has sailed.
And as the leaders of the U.S. Maritime Alliance would say, that ship that sails on the sea.
Right.
These are seaworthy vessels. Let's all get together in one big joyful alliance.
All get together. And what's the rest of that line in that song?
I don't know.
And love one another.
Love one another. Fred knows it. He spun that record many times in Canada.
That's right.
All right. What was the long song that you used to take a break, go to the restroom?
Hey Jude, seven minutes.
Hey Jude.
Hey Jude, you can do a lot if you're a radio DJ during the Hey Jude song, right? That,
all the necessary things.
We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
Could the fate of America's children be tied to the fate of our nation? Much like abortionists who end the lives of the unborn, the left is determined to undermine the pro-life movement. First, they target the babies. Then, they come for the rest of us. Preborn stands as a beacon of hope for the most defenseless among us, preborn babies. Every day, Preborn's network of clinics rescues, on average, over 200 babies while surrounding expectant mothers with God's love and offering a free ultrasound. Rescuing the miracle of life has never been more crucial as we navigate this time of moral decline in our nation. Will you join Preborn in protecting the least among us? For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound and give a mother the chance to choose life, not only for her baby, but for herself. An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Fred, and Ray, we thank you for listening to AFR. Well, we've got at least three big issues facing our country right now. We had the aftermath of the hurricane hit Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, and North Carolina in particular. There are some other states affected too, but those states, a lot of people still don't have power. And then you have a situation with the longshoremen that we've talked about here, otherwise called the dock workers. And that situation isn't solved in the next 4 or 5 days, it's going to show up. It's going to start showing up big across our country, talking about products and things of that nature that we're used to having aren't going to be on the shelves. It doesn't sound like to me. Right. Maybe I'm overreacting. We'll have to wait and see, but I don't think we want to wait and see.
Right? I don't.
All right, so we got that situation. And then on the international scene, we have what's happening in Israel and between Israel and Iran. And what is our leadership in this country doing to support Israel or not? That's a big issue right now. And so joining us to discuss that issue is Joel Rosenberg. Joel is founder and editor-in-chief of AllIsrael.com, best-selling author. Most of you are familiar with Joel. He's on Jenna Ellis's program oftentimes. And he joins us this morning. Joel, good morning. This is Tim.
Tim, it's great to be with you from Washington. How are you?
Well, thank you. Yes, thank you. From Washington. Now, do you have dual citizenship, or do you just you go to Israel often? How does that work?
Yeah, dual citizenship. We're U.S. and Israeli citizens. We live in Jerusalem. Two of our four sons have served in the Israeli army, including one of them in a special forces unit and one of them up on the Lebanon border. So, yeah, we're all in. I happen to be right now, Tim, in the middle of a one-month speaking tour across the United States, briefing evangelical leaders and lay people on what is happening in Israel, Iran, Gaza, Lebanon, and the broader region I call the epicenter, and mobilizing them to pray. And so I really appreciate the opportunity to come on your program today and talk about what's happening, because it's a fast-moving and very dangerous story.
Joel, Fred Jackson here. I want to play you a bit of a clip from President Joe Biden who was asked about what's going on in Israel right now and Israel's threat to respond to the missile attack from Iran the other day. And so I just want to play this for you and get your response to Joe Biden's feeling about how Israel should or should not respond. Cut number six.
And there's going to be some sanctions imposed on Iran.
Sir, do you
support an attack on Iran's nuclear sites by Israel?
The answer is no. I think there's things we'll be discussing with the Israelis what they're going to do. But they have, all seven of us agree that they have a right to respond, but they should respond in proportion.
So, Joel, the president appeared to be saying, the seven he was referring to as the G7 countries, they're supposed to put out a joint statement on how they think Israel should respond. But Biden is certainly saying, no, I would not support Israel targeting Iran's nuclear facilities. Your thoughts?
This is not American leadership. Okay, President Biden constantly says how much he loves Israel, how he stands with us, and how he will never allow Israel to be threatened and never allow Iran to build nuclear weapons. But here is the critical moment. We as Israelis are being attacked from seven different sides, from Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas in Gaza, the Houthis in Yemen, from Iranian proxy terror groups in Syria, in Iraq, in the West Bank, what we call Judea and Samaria, and of course from Iran itself, with almost 200 ballistic missiles fired at Israel on Tuesday. Now, if there were ever a moment for the United States leadership, the American president, to say, Israel, we have your back, finish the job, we're with you, we will help you, we will supply you, we will arm you, this is the moment. What moment are we waiting? What moment is President Biden waiting for? I mean, this is crazy talk. I'm sorry. I'm trying not to say this as a partisan. If President Trump were in office and he were saying this, I would criticize him. But President Biden is not being an ally. He's not being a friend. And every other ally of America around the world is watching. Every enemy of the United States and Israel is watching President Biden and the rest of the G7 not support an ally under attack from seven different directions, including what some people call the head of the octopus, which is the Iranian regime. This is the moment. This is the moment. Iran has crossed the line, and it's time for Israel to attack Iran's nuclear facilities and destroy them, Iran's oil refinery capacity and destroy it, and do a decapitating strike to take out the Iranian leadership. This is the moment. Iran is the existential threat to Israel. Biden knows it, but Biden is weak, Harris is weak, and they have no intention of helping Israel. Instead, they're trying to get Israel to surrender, and I think that's moral bankruptcy.
Joel, Ed here. By the way, folks, you're listening to Joel Rosenberg, founder.
Are you going to be able to pull anything out of Joel?
it's hard.
I don't know why we did this interview.
It's hard to get him. Yeah, it's hard to get him to say what he really believes.
I try to use diplomatic speech,
yes,
gentlemen. You know, I can tell. To parse my phrases.
Hey, Joel, let me ask you this, and then we'll let Ray Pritchard jump in here too. But it seems like, to your point, it seems like this is the moment. The U.S. has said, members of NATO have said in the past, Israel has said we cannot allow Iran to get a nuclear capability because of the designs they have to be a hegemon in the Middle East. And now that they have blatantly, not just through their proxies, blatantly attacked Israel, this is the perfect moment to do that, what everyone has said they do not want to allow Iran to do. So let me ask you this. Why? Why has Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, why have they walked away from this opportunity for Israel? Is there something that Iran has over the Biden administration? Do they want Israel to fail? Do they want Iran to get nuclear weapons in reality? What is the explanation in your mind for this?
Yeah, those are all good questions. So let me make a couple points. The first point is I want to be clear to all of your listeners that I don't want war. As an evangelical, as an American, as an Israeli, you know, I'm horrified and grieved by this war, by the suffering, the death, the injuries that are happening. But let's be clear. The Bible is clear in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 8. There is a time for peace, and there's a time for war. This is a time for war. We didn't start it in Israel. We don't want it, but we have to win it. This is not a matter of surrendering. That's what Biden and Harris want us to do. They want us to surrender. Now, they won't use the language of surrendering. They use the language of ceasefire. They use the language of permanent ceasefire.
Two-state solution. You get that two-state solution garbage, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. So, but all of it is code for surrender.
Yes.
And the problem with surrendering is you're surrendering to people who, like in Iran, they have no territorial dispute with us. We don't have a border, with Iran. Lebanon, we have a border with Lebanon, but we don't have a territorial dispute with Lebanon. We retreated and gave back southern Lebanon to the Lebanese government in 2000. That's 24 years ago. We don't have a territorial dispute with Gaza. We pulled out every soldier and civilian from Israel out of the Gaza Strip in 2005. That's almost 20 years ago. So these three territories have no territorial dispute with us. But what dispute do they have? They hate us. They see us as a cancer in the region, their words, not mine. And they want to annihilate us. That's right. Their words, not mine. And so you can't just defend yourself constantly. You have to defeat. Defending is not enough. You have to defeat these enemies. And now they've gone way too far. And a real ally, if the United States was a real ally under Biden, Harris, Walz, you see the United States helping Israel finish the job. But let's just to summarize that, I would say this. When a political party, when political leaders don't understand what a man is, what a woman is, what a baby is, and don't understand the evils of killing babies in the womb and, you know, body parts from little girls, little boys, making it like them to change the genders. When you're that morally confused, is it really that surprising that they don't understand what good and evil is when it comes to foreign policy? And so Israel right now is fighting the enemies of the United States, right? Israel's only the little Satan in the view of the Iranian leadership. The United States is the great Satan. And once Iran is finished with Israel, they're coming after the United States. Make no mistake about that. But Biden and Harris, Walz, they just genuinely don't understand it. War is not a means to win. It's something to get out of as rapidly as possible, even if you have to give up.
I was reading, by the way, we're talking to Joel Rosenberg. He's the founder and editor-in-chief of allisrael.com. Tim, Ray, Fred, and Ed talking to Joel. I'm going to make this comment, and then if you want to comment, Joel, and then Ray can ask a question if we don't run out of time. Huh? Because we keep telling Ray he's getting a question.
Yeah.
But he's
get ready, Ray.
He doesn't believe us anymore. I'm here. So I was reading a comment last night about as Joel said, this is a clear battle of evil versus good. Okay. This is not ambiguous.
Right.
I'm talking about Israel and Iran. All right. And all of Joel said about that with the what the state of Israel is facing, and the people in Israel, the Jews in particular, they're fighting people who hate their guts because they're Jews. They're not fighting over land. They're not the Hezbollah people and the Hamas people. They're not Iranian. You know what I'm saying? They're not even. I mean, with respect to Hamas and Iran, they're not even the same type Muslims. They basically think each other are cults, Shia and Sunni I'm talking about. So
right.
But so what you have here is just rank utter hatred for the Jews, anti-Semitism. Yes, they would argue that the Jews have no right to that land. I'm sure they'll put that in there. But basically, it comes down to just hatred for the Jews because they're Jews. But what I wanted to ask you, Joel, is, oh, what I was going to say was, I was reading an article last night where the commentator was saying it's so easy for especially American ultra-liberals to critique every move that Israel makes in defense of itself since there are no rockets being fired at Martha's Vineyard. And you know what I'm saying?
Right.
These people live in their own enclaves and just nitpick what Israel does while they're not having to face annihilation of their own people on an ongoing basis. You want to comment on that and then break and...
Look, American liberals didn't want to build, and they still don't want to build, a missile defense system for America, right? It was Democrats and liberals who mocked President Ronald Reagan in the 1980s when he said, look, we have to build a missile defense system. Will it be hard? Yes. Will it be expensive? Of course. But we need to do it to defend ourselves so we're not vulnerable to nuclear blackmail from the Soviet Union or anyone else. But the Democrats mocked him as, you know, as being in a delusional fantasy world where all he knew was Star Wars, the movie. But Israel has actually taken Ronald Reagan's advice and built a multi-layered missile defense system that the Democrats were opposed to for a long time. Now, to their credit, let's be fair, President Obama and Vice President Joe Biden at the time are the ones that actually funded the Iron Dome system and have been supportive, as many Democrats, not all, of our missile defense program. But right now, the White House wants Israel only to defend itself, but not to defeat our enemies. The problem is one of these missiles one day coming from Iran is going to have a nuclear warhead. And what if we miss? We cannot allow ourselves to constantly play defense. To win a war, you have to go on offense. You have to defeat, not just defend. And that's what Democrats, most of them, unfortunately, just don't understand. And yet, as I talk about on our lead story at All Israel News, and I do encourage people to go, allisrael.com, our lead story is on Biden trying to pressure Netanyahu to stand down and not go after the Iranian leadership, the Iranian oil refineries, or the Iranian nuclear facilities. But I also quote lots of Israelis and Americans, including a prominent Democrat, former Defense Secretary under Bill Clinton, William Cohen, who says that's exactly what Israel is planning and should do at this moment.
Go ahead, Joel, Ray.
Joel, let me go back to something you said earlier, which is actually tremendously concerning. Israel is fighting, you said, a seven-front war. It's hard enough if you're just going after Hamas or if you're just going after Hezbollah, but a seven-front war. Two questions. How do you fight and win a war like that? And I guess my second question is, can Israel win? Can they win this battle? And if so, in order to win, what really does Israel need from the United States to help them win?
Well, those are two good questions, Ray. So let me give you the concise answer. What you need to win, humanly speaking, is the world's only superpower to act like the world's only superpower. Congress has already overwhelmingly voted on a bipartisan basis, despite, you know, the craziness in the squad, overwhelming bipartisan support for billions and billions of dollars of arms and missiles and interceptors for Israel. President Biden signed it. He just won't spend it. He just won't give Israel all the weapons we need. Why? Because he's trying to leverage us into surrender, because he thinks that's the better way. And so what we need, humanly speaking, is a ally who acts like an ally. You know, we're not asking American soldiers, men and women, to put boots on the ground in the Middle East to fight for us. We're just asking for the tools so we can finish the job. That's what the British asked, in World War II. Now, eventually, American forces were required to win World War II, but that's because of the appeasement that had happened for decades prior. Israel's not asking for American boots on the ground, but we're asking for the tools so that we can finish the job and the political support at the UN and elsewhere. But here's the main thing. Ultimately, Israel is not a normal country. We have the God of Israel, and Israelis are not appealing to the God of Israel. They don't understand. They don't really know the God of Israel because they don't know his son, Jesus the Messiah. So we who are evangelicals who do know the God of Israel personally and have been personally adopted into his family through our faith by grace in the Lord Jesus the Messiah, we need to prayerfully intercede on behalf of Israel and the Jewish people. I believe we're seeing God supernaturally respond to the prayers of millions of evangelicals all over the world by giving Israel these tremendous, miraculous, truly miraculous successes in recent weeks, assassinating the head of Hezbollah, Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah, in broad daylight in the center of Beirut in a bunker 60 feet underground. That's miraculous. Okay, taking out the head of Hamas in a guest room in Tehran a few months ago, that's Ismail Haniyeh. That's miraculous. Nobody else was killed, just the head of Hamas. And now, you know, taking out 18 of the top 18 senior commanders of Hezbollah in the last few days, taking out 4,000 Hezbollah senior and mid-level commanders with explosive-laden pagers and walkie-talkies. That's genius, but it takes more than genius. It's taking the act of God to defend Israel, even though the Israelis don't know God personally yet, but evangelicals do, and we love Israel, and we love the Jewish people. Yes, we love Palestinians and Lebanese also, and we want mercy and security and peace and healing for them, but we are interceding for Israel to win. And God is hearing our prayers, and we best not stop.
Joel, just one more question for you. We're coming up on Monday, the one-year anniversary of that horrible massacre there in southern Israel. I have two questions, actually. Have you been shocked by the reaction of young people on our campuses in this country, how quickly they turned on Israel? And number two, what is the political climate in Israel 1 year after this massacre? Does Netanyahu still have the support of the country to continue this battle?
So I wasn't shocked, horrified, but not shocked by the reaction of liberal geniuses, so quote-unquote, on the campuses of Columbia, Harvard, Princeton, Yale, Stanford, where in Berkeley. I mean, because what they're learning from fellow so-called geniuses is the exact opposite of wisdom. And so it's not surprising if they don't understand, you know, basic biblical truth that they're going to get Israel wrong. Okay. It's horrifying, but it's not surprising. I would contrast that to the young people in Israel who don't know the Lord. Right. And so that's a problem, but stood up. Like, they've risen to the challenge. They are fighting tooth and nail to defend our country. And it's pretty impressive to watch. Kids who were on TikTok a year ago are now fighting for their lives and our country and are winning. That's pretty impressive. In terms of Netanyahu, his actual political fortunes are rising right now. His numbers are going up. His party's numbers are going up. And he just picked up 4 seats from one of the opposition leaders, who Gideon Saar, who used to be an ally of Netanyahu, but then had a break with him several years ago because of big, deep disagreements. But Gideon Saar and his party of 4 have decided to join the Netanyahu government right now, just last week. Why? Because they want to win. They don't agree with Netanyahu on everything, but they believe that the country needs to be unified to win, that now is not the right time for elections. There will be a time, and Netanyahu will have to defend himself for the catastrophic failure on October 7th last year. But right now, we are not looking back to litigate the past. We're trying to win right now. And I think Gideon Saar did the right thing. And I hope the rest of the country of Israel will unify. But it actually, you know, it's pretty heartening that right now we're more unified than ever and we're winning, even though Biden is not helping. But give Netanyahu a lot of credit right now, because he is defying Biden and he's leading Israel to victory. And we need to keep praying for him and his people, not out of partisanship, but out of our biblical mandate to stand with Israel and bless Israel in the name of Jesus.
Yeah. Thank you, Joel. Appreciate it very much. We encourage people to go to your website, allisrael.com, and read your thoughts and information there. Thank you so much.
My honor. Thank you.
Okay, that's Joel Rosenberg joining us from Washington, D.C. He's a dual citizen of Israel and the U.S. Joel came to prominence back in the he wrote a book about Bible prophecy in Israel, didn't he?
He's written a bunch of novels.
Yes.
You know. Novel. They're novels.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
What was the name of it? Like
First one?
The Ezekiel option?
I think that might have been the first
one. He wrote the book of Revelation. That's what it says right here.
He didn't go that far back.
No?
No.
Epicenter.
Actually, his first one, I'm just looking, last Jihad series started in 2002. The Ezekiel option was the third book in that series.
Which one have you read, Ray?
I've read a lot of his more recent novels. I've read Epicenter. And he says that the person who turned his fortunes around in terms of publishing was Rush Limbaugh. He knew Rush Limbaugh, and Rush mentioned him in his books on his program one day, and he shot up the New York Times bestseller list. And Joel Rosenberg is great. All of his books.
Hadn't looked back.
All right, we're going to take a short time out right here. We're going to talk to a gentleman who knows all about America's military and also what might happen in the coming weeks and months in the world, but in the Middle East in particular. Retired Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis will join us. And Steve Paisley Jordahl will be here too. We'll see you back in a few minutes. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.